This is one of those what I like to call a funnel sermon, which means I'm going to throw a whole lot at you, and then as we move along, I'm going to pull it all together, and you're going to get to the end and say, wow, he managed to do that in that little bit of amount of time. But I need you to pay really close attention to me, because I got to tell you about your situation. Listen up. By the way, if you have a bulletin, you're going to probably need that too, because even if you're not a blank filler in, you're going to have to fill in the first three. But listen here. You are in a plane. Now, I realize for some of you that now scares you greatly, but that's okay. You are in a plane flying over the desert. The plane crashes. And no one is hurt, but the radio is totally destroyed, and it looks as if the plane is going to explode in exactly 1 minute. In the plane, there are only 10 things you can see to take out of the plane. But you only can take 3 items with you. What 3 items would best ensure the survival and why? Now here's the deal. I'm going to show you a list. Your list includes a bottle of water, a box of salt tablets, a parachute, a knife, a sun hat, a lady's vanity mirror, a watch, a compass, a first aid box, and sunglasses. It is now 10:59. You have 1 minute to pick your items and then list them on the first 3 blanks there in the bulletin there. Good luck. Only 3. Best ensure your survival. Your life depends on your choices. Clock's ticking. Plane's going to explode. There? See a lot of conversation. Hopefully you've got your items picked out. You've gathered them together. Makes a whole lot harder when I'm talking, isn't it? And stop. Now, I am told that in these kind of exercises, there is no such thing as a wrong or a right answer, but guess what? There are wrong and right answers, according to the U.S. military. This is one of their survival tests that they give to people, and believe it or not, they actually do have an answer of what you should have taken with you. So I want to see how you did. But the experts say you should have grabbed, as you were exiting the plane before it went boom, the third item on the list should have been a knife. Why a knife? Well, that is to cut off the tops of the cactuses that are in the desert so that you can get water, which you must have if you are going to survive in the desert. Makes perfect sense. Now, the second item on the list actually is a basic need item. They said you should have grabbed the parachute. Why do you want the parachute? Well, because after the plane explodes and you're out in the desert and when the sun comes up and the sun gets very hot in the desert, there is no shade, and so you're going to want the parachute to build some kind of a shade device out of. These two things make perfect sense to me. But the thing that the military says you should grab first and foremost is the mirror. Oh. Now, why would I want a mirror? I mean, I don't want to look at myself. I mean, I know I don't look good. I just survived the plane crash. There you go. The problem is if I'm not going to be able to survive in this environment very long, the whole intent is to get rescued. And to get rescued, well, eventually they're going to notice my plane didn't arrive at an airport and it crashed somewhere. So they're going to send out rescue planes. And as the planes are flying over ground, I need the mirror to gather the light to reflect it back to the people that are trying to rescue me. Man, that's interesting. Now, you need to hold that thought because this is really all about the light and what defines you. I left last week's sermon with this particular question. What defines you, where you came from, how you got here, the path that you followed to this point in your life, is that what defines your spiritual relationship? Or is your spiritual relationship defined by where you're going? Defined by the light? Defined by what you're trying to reflect back to? And how you define your spiritual relationship is important, because if you define it by how you got here, then usually that starts to turn us inward focused. That starts to get us to the point where we're looking at things how I just survived to the next thing, because it makes me wanting to preserve the history, not move forward. If I define my spiritual relationship by the fact that I am looking for a relationship that is connected to Christ, I am looking for, as they said at the end of the clip there, following the light, then it totally changes the way that we do things. And so we have in the past, everybody, defined ourselves by how we got here. Who our family is, what our relationship was, what church we grew up in, what name we put on the outside of the building. All of those things we try to use to define ourselves. And what we have been learning over the past month or so, since the beginning of the year, actually going all the way back when we were at the island with Moana, all of those things come together by we cannot define by where we went, where we've been. We want to define by where we're going. And that's a big lesson. So now let's start taking the funnel and pulling everything together. See, we've been on this journey. We started this journey the very first week of the year. We're in a very unconventional place because you don't usually find cavemen in a church, but that's okay. I'm okay with unconventional. Cavemen are fine because they're simply men that live in caves. I'm okay with that. Lots of people live in caves. We call them houses these days, but they're still the same concept as a cave. And so they are defining themselves by where they have been, but their cave got destroyed. And when their cave got destroyed, they found themselves thrust into a brand new world. And so the brand new world they found themselves in meant that their actions had to evolve. And we took this movie and we broke it apart into little bitty clips because I wanted us to see how our faith has to do the same thing. You see, we're in a world that is constantly changing. Things don't work the way they used to. I wish they did, because you know what? It was a lot simpler, but things just don't work that way. And so as we move out into that territory, as we try to go reflect the light that God has given us out to the world, then you know what? Our faith has to evolve also. And so there are some lessons that we learned as we followed the creeds along. And the first thing we found out is faith is not just about following the rules. There are no cave paintings on the wall that tell us every single thing that we're supposed to do. I mean, how things were done in the past are not necessarily how we're supposed to do things in the future. It isn't just about the rules anymore, because Jesus didn't really always follow the rules himself. We looked at those moments when the Pharisees had lots of problems with what Jesus' disciples were doing, and he told them, it's not always about the rules, it's about the relationship. As we moved across with the crews, we found out that God is in charge of tomorrow, and we should live like it. We understand that we are placing our faith, we're placing our lives in God's hand, and what that does for me as the individual is I have to understand that God's plan sometimes trumps my plan. I can't live like there is no God. I can't live because there is no, not because I'm afraid of tomorrow. I can't live just because I want to accumulate things for tomorrow. God is in control of the tomorrow, and if I am going to allow my faith to be more than just a bunch of rules and regulations, if I'm going to allow it to evolve, then you know what? I have to realize God's in control of my tomorrow. We must be willing to build on the old to reach the new. Now, this was a big lesson if you remember this. This was the wineskins and the cloth patches, and we wanted to make sure that you understood. The idea isn't to out with the old and in with the new. The idea is to take the old, take the things that we built on. And even though the creeds were in a brand new world, they still breathe, they still walk, they still wore clothes, they still did many of the things that they had done their entire life. But what they had to do is evolve into the fact, like, where they went from just wearing skins to actually had to wear shoes. Because the world changed around them. And so when you put new and old together, it's not a competition where we're trying to replace the old with the new. We're trying to take the new and allow it to build itself upon the solid foundation of the old. Big lesson. We possess the light and have nothing to fear of the dark. We have this idea sometimes in church that we need to push the world away because that's darkness, and if we get too close to that, then it's going to infect me. And as we looked at this idea, we came to the conclusion that, you know what, we're not supposed to be pushing the dark away. We're supposed to be those mirrors, taking that reflection and going out into the dark and shining the light so that people will see exactly where we came from. We have this idea that there is a difference between living for Christ and living not to die. There is no idea in Christianity that I'm simply living this Christian life so that I can get to heaven. This is not an investment account where someday I'm going to cash in all my chips and get wings and a harp and a cloud and I'm going to sit there and pearly gates. That isn't the destination. The goal is a relationship with Christ. And so there's a lot of different ways of living, and you can't live just not to die. You can't live just because I think I want to go to heaven. God desires us to live for the relationship. There is no going back to the cave, only going forward to the future. In last week's lesson, when Glug finally gathered his family and he finally saw the light and he finally realized where he was going and he gathered his family and he literally threw them over the ravine, and there he was sacrificing himself because he understood, like he told Thunk Cruise, when you make it, I make it. When the next generation understands that there's a light out there and they're willing to follow the light, then guess what? We've accomplished our mission at that point. But until that point, we're not there. We have not accomplished our mission until we have taken what we have and passed it on to the generation in front of us. And we can't do that by going back to the cave. We can only do that by today's lesson. We must live in the light. Now, we have done a whole lot of sermons about light in the past. And we understand what the idea of light is. We understand light is the opposite of darkness. We understand that, well, we're supposed to shine the light. Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16 says, You being the church, are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it in its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So the main purpose of the church is to shine the light. And we sung that song a few weeks ago. And it doesn't matter whether we're doing it from shore to shore or forevermore. It doesn't matter how we close out the song. The idea is we're supposed to shine. Now you're saying, oh, wait a minute. Now you're going way back. Yeah, now I'm all the way back into last year. Because remember last year, we kind of gave you the idea of what it meant to shine in the church. And remember, I told you, you're going to see this again. So hopefully you're not going, oh my gosh, what's he going to do next? Well, I'm not going to set anything on fire. You're happy to know. This is a simple acronym to remember. If we're going to shine, the first thing we have to learn is to serve God with all our heart. Shining begins with the idea of serving. Shining continues with the idea of honor God in our worship. That thing that we do here on Sunday morning, we call this a worship service. The entire idea behind it is to bring our voices collectively, our talents, our gifts, our skills, put them all together and make something that we offer back to God, not something that I'm offering to myself. And so I'm offering it back to God, and so I am supposed to honor God with everything that I do. And keep in mind, this worship that we do on Sunday morning is nothing more than an overflow of what we do in the rest of our life. We're supposed to invite others to come. That's important. I mean, that's the first step that you have in trying to reach out to a world is you have to say, would you like to join me? We have to notice the needs of others and meet them. So we had serve at the beginning, and as we move down to the idea of shining, we go from just serving to the idea of ministry, to the idea of looking into people's lives and seeing what's broken, what's busted, whether it's physical, spiritual, or whatever it is, and asking ourselves, can I help? Can I get involved in your life in a way that maybe isn't a religious or a spiritual way, but is more about understanding who you are? Can I notice your need and then attempt to move into your life and meet it? And then, of course, we spoke about the idea of encouraging one another in our walk. See, the funnel's starting to pull together now. See, we start out with this idea that we're supposed to shine, and it's moving down now into what the church is supposed to do. And now, as we begin to further focus that funnel, we want to talk about how to follow the light. Now, you say, well, what's the difference between shining the light and following the light? Well, let's go back to the mirror that we took off the plane. For me to shine the light, do I have to move? No. As a matter of fact, probably better if I didn't move at that point, right? And in fact, I can sit there and I can find the sun and I can take the mirror and I can follow the sun across the sky and move it back and forth and it reflects the light back up. So shining the light, I can do right here today. And you know what? It can kind of turn us into a lighthouse where we're just trying to attract people to us. I like the other picture, you know, things that you use to attract people, a bug zapper.
You know, we think we're supposed to lure people in so we can just give them a little spirituality real quick and then send them back out into the world. So I can try to shine my light staying right here, but if I'm going to follow the light and the light is moving, what does that mean I have to do? I have to move too. I have to go right along with the light, because if I'm going to follow the light, then wherever it goes, I go. And that becomes very, very important. And here's the good news. If you pay real close attention to that clip, we got the perfect outline of how to follow the light. Like, okay, I got to see you do this one. Not a problem. First step, get out of the way. And that Woody screamed coming over there. I mean, he had tossed his family to safety. And now Grub Crude has found his way across there because he had built a contraption. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. He had built a contraption to get across the ravine himself. And then when he's coming in and he sees his family, what's the first thing he says? Get out of the way. Now, I'm not talking about get out of the way, not show up anymore. This is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about in Matthew chapter 16, 24, it says, then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Folks, if we want to follow the light, we have to get ourselves out of the way. If we want to follow the light, it doesn't mean that I always get to follow it the way that I want to follow it. I mean, if I was going to follow the light, I'd like one of the little golf carts that they use down at the beach, and I could just kind of get comfortable, get my little fan blowing up here, and I could make this real comfortable, even have a cup holder so I could put my Mountain Dew in it, and I could follow the light. It doesn't work like that. You see, it's not an armchair. It's a cross. And if I'm going to follow the light, then I need to come to the conclusion I cannot follow the light and serve ourselves. And that shine little thing, the first thing up there was serve God. We don't serve God to benefit ourselves. We serve God to benefit others so that others can then see the light, so that others can then come to the light. And make no mistake about it, it's a choice. You have a choice. God does not do what Grub's family did. God just grabbed everybody and flung them out the way so that they get bombarded by this contraption coming over the ravine. God lets you make a choice. You can leave your life front and center in your life, and you can make it all about you. And you know what? God is happy to let you do it. He will. And he might put some speed bumps in there. He might put some signs up there to try to make you turn. But in the end, it's your choice. Nobody can make you do it. But you do need to understand, as long as you stay in front and center in your life, as long as you are in that mode, then you understand you're not following the light. You're following yourself. That's it. And so if we are going to actually follow the light, then you know what? We have to get out of the way sometimes. And that means I have to take my wants, my beliefs, my desires, my preferences, my old, where I came from. And sometimes that has to take a back seat to where God has us going at the moment. Second thing you have to do is riding the sun. Now, I do realize Grub's son was spelled S-U-N, and ours is spelled S-O-N. It was not a spelling mistake. I really did mean to do it that way. In John chapter 8, verse 12, it says, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of light. This is real simple. It's the sunflower lesson that we've done before. The idea that if we're going to actually follow the light, then we have to know the light, right? You have to understand Jesus is the light. And so my job is, when he calls me the light of the world, I am a mirror. I do not produce light on my own. I am reflecting the light. There's our mirror concept again. That Jesus sends to me. But keep in mind, the mirror only works as long as what? It's in view. Oh, that didn't sound. Oh, I thought something just popped in my microphone. I'm like, okay, we're good. David's trying to see if I'm awake. Okay, so we have to understand that if we're going to follow the light, the mirror has to be able to come in contact with it. The mirror simply reflects back the light that it has received. And if we, the church, are going to reflect back the light, then you have to understand we have to stay in contact with the light, and so we have to ride in his steps. It's funny how Grub got across that ravine. He used every lesson that he had learned on his journey. He learned the information that he had learned about the birds, that they were afraid of fire, and if you put it behind them, they'd fly in a single direction. He used the lesson that he learned in the tar pit, that tar is sticky, and if I cover it with something, whatever touches it gets stuck to it. He learned the idea of how to make fire, because that's how you get fire. And he took everything that he had, and he said, you know what, I'm going to take everything I've learned, and I'm not going to focus on how to get back where I came from. I'm going to focus on where I'm going. And at that point, Grug, for the first time in his life, had an idea that didn't require him to hit something, break something, or throw something. He had an idea on how to ride the sun. And we have to do the same thing. We have to take that same anticipation. We have to take that same willingness and put everything that we've learned and put it into some kind of a contraption, some kind of a device, some kind of a process that we can take out to the world so that we can ride the sun. Because isn't that what Jesus did? He went out into the world. He didn't come here to build a building. He came here to seek and save the lost. We must, if we're going to follow the light, learn to include others. Now, when I was about 10 years old, I got a kickball for my birthday. We played community kickball, and then, you know, everybody came up to my house, and we played kickball. And so my parents brought me, I don't know why they picked this color, a lime green kickball for my 10th birthday. And I want to tell you something. I got the kickball, and I was ready to play. I was born in September, so it was still warm enough for us to have. And people started gathering at my house, and we were going to play kickball. But a funny thing happened. Since it was my ball, guess what I then thought? I have more ability to make the rules, right? It's my ball, right? It's mine. And so I didn't include others. And you know what I soon found out? There was only one more person willing to play kickball with me. That was me. And that makes it very difficult to play kickball all by yourself. And so we must, as a church, learn to include others. And here's what I mean by that. When Grug numbered his family all the way through that movie, it was always six. It included himself, his two daughters, his wife, his son, and, well, his mother-in-law. He tried really hard a few times to make it five, but it always came up six because every time mother-in-law was still alive, still here, and he had that look on his face. But you have to understand, it was always six until we get to the end. And then as he starts counting, he counts the original six, and then he includes the guy he did not like. I mean, he wasn't a big guy fan. As a matter of fact, last week we found out he wanted to throw him away ever since he met him. He didn't like him because, well, his daughter liked him a whole bunch. And that was enough for a dad not to like just because daughter liked him. And so he did not like him all that much. But when he started counting, he reached out and he pulled him into the family. He had to include those he did not understand. Huh? Belt. Raised his hand. I want to be counted. And while he couldn't understand a word this creature was saying, he didn't understand anything about this creature. He didn't know what the purpose of this creature was. He looked at him, and because he wanted to be part of the family, but Grug had to say, okay, we'll count you too. He had to include those that were trying to destroy him. Remember Chunky the Death Cat when they met him way back at the beginning when they were afraid of the dark? And what did Chunky want? Dinner. That's what the Croods were. They were dinner. And so he was there, and he's including him as part of the family because things have changed. Even though at one point they were at odds with each other, he's including them now. He had to include those that got lost along the way. Douglas, the little pet dog, or whatever he was supposed to be. Remember, Thump found him in a cave, and he ended up losing him in a tree. You'll have to watch the movie on your own. Okay, and he ended up losing him, but as Krug is putting together his contraption, he finds Douglas, and he scoops him up and throws him in and brings him along for the journey too, even though he had lost his way in the past. He even had to include those he just found along the way. Some of those animals we didn't see for the entire movie, they just happen to be standing on the side of the road as he's trying to get his contraption in the air, and he doesn't want to leave anybody behind. See, that's the important part. Grug picked up any and everybody along the way as he was coming over that ravine, and that is our job as the church. If we're going to follow the light, any and everybody that we find along the side of the road, that we find along the side of our life, that we want to see into our future, we want to pick them up and bring them along for the journey. We must include them, and that means sometimes we have to find methods to include them. We have to find ways to include them. Sometimes we have to make things where they will understand them. Following the light sounds a little more complicated than living in the cave. Yes. Yes, it does.
it's supposed to. And you know what? Jesus had a big love for people that did not fit the norm. He did. He really did. Mark chapter 2, verse 15 says, while Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. It's funny, Jesus was always picking up the strays, the leftovers, the broken, the busted, the people that didn't fit society, the ones that the Pharisees turned their noses up and said they're not good enough to come into the temple. Jesus had a big heart for those people. Maybe the intention is for, as we follow Jesus, we're supposed to have a big heart for those people also. The people whose lives are just train wrecks. Those are the people that the church was designed for. The church is not designed for church people. The church was designed for people that are seeking to follow the light. So after you do all this, there's another thing that you need if you're going to continue to follow the light. You have to have vision. Now, as they stood up on that precipice, that's the second time that Eep had used that phrase, you have got to see this. Remember, the first time was right after their cave got destroyed, and when she said, you've got to see that, and she got ready to move, and Grug's like, we're not going anywhere. Well, now, things have definitely changed. Because as she stands up on that precipice, and they look out there, and they see this, she's having a vision of what's out there. And we have to do the same. Matthew chapter 9, verses 36 through 37. When he saw the crowds, this is Jesus, he had compassion on them. Because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd, then he said to his disciples, your ears should perk up because this is what we claim. We are following Christ, thus we are disciples. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Jesus had to call their attention to this scene to help them understand, this is the vision I want you to see. I don't want you to see the world like the Pharisees see it. I want you to see the world like this, as a group of people that are harassed and helpless, people that are lost because they don't have a shepherd. Those are the people I want your heart to go out for, and those are the people that if we're following the light, those are the people we're going to see. Those are the people that we're going to feel compassion for. When's the last time you felt a compassion for a person that you just found on the side of your life and made just a total train wreck of their life? We don't usually have compassion. You know what we usually have? Judgment. We want to explain to them all the things that they did wrong with their life so we can then tell them how to do it right. They don't need that. Trust me, when you're at that point, been there, done that, when you're at that point, you already know what you did wrong. You've got that part figured out. What you want to know is, can you help me? Do we have compassion for the people in our life? Because if we do, that's following the light. Man, Grug kind of got this right, didn't he? Well, there's one more thing. You have to go. You knew this was coming, right? I mean, you know, I'm in love with this verse. We've been preaching this verse now, it feels like, for like a half a year. I don't know how many sermons we've done with this one verse, but you find it everywhere. Acts chapter 1, verse 8. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes to you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in Judea and in Samaria and the ends of the earth. And you just knew it was coming because this is the idea behind the church. It is not enough just to see it. To stand there at the door, to stand there at the window, to stand there at your house window and look at the world and say, it's a mess. Well, congratulations, that's Captain Obvious moment. It's obvious it's a mess. To see it isn't enough. You guys know I'm a big proponent of prayer, but just to pray for the situation, it's not enough. It's not enough for us to sit here and say, God, will you just fix it? Well, you know, we're really asking, God, will you just make it easier for me? No, that's not the point. Yeah, we're supposed to pray for the lost, and we do that, but that is not enough. That is not where our obligation begins. You see, eventually, if you're going to follow the light, you have to go. You do. I'd like you to take a challenge. Go ahead, take your New Testament and go from the beginning to the end of the New Testament and tell me one single person that God came in contact with, that God didn't immediately take them home, that eventually didn't go share the gospel with somebody. You won't find them. They don't exist. Anybody that decided to follow Christ and decided to follow the light, eventually they went. wow, that's a lot of stuff to do. Yeah, welcome to the church. That's the journey we're supposed to be taking. I want you to see what's missing. Me. What I wanted and what I desired and what I think is a good idea oftentimes just has to go to the back seat because you know what? We're not called to make me happy. Trust me, it would be a lot easier for you if you were just called to make me happy because I'm not very difficult to make happy. But we're supposed to be out there trying to win a world. We're supposed to be out there following the light. And I just want to warn you, if you choose to do this, it'll change their way of life. Think about at the beginning of the Croods, they were kind of pale. They kind of lived amongst the rocks. You know, they didn't know what the concept of leftovers was. They ran back to the cave every time there was a little bit of danger. Things didn't work well. When we get to the end, they're living on a beach. I'm glad it's them and not me. I'm not a beach fan. But they're not living in a cave. There is no shelter. They've got a nice suntan. They've even started doing a little cosmetics here and there. You know, they're starting to think about things. But has their world really changed that much? Not really. It's still harsh. It's still going to get dark every so often. It's still dangerous. So what changed? They did. They decided that instead of running back to the cave, that we are going to live out here where we can follow the light. And so I guess here is my question. If you're not following the light in your spiritual life, if Jesus is not your focus, if you're not trying to develop your relationship with Christ so that you can go out and share it with others, where are you going? Man, you're scamping around that plane trying to figure out which items you're going to pull out of the plane because the reality is, since you don't know where you're going, since you don't know what you're trying to do, then you know what? The 10 items, you don't know what to pick. But as soon as you figure out that your idea is to capture the light so that you can be rescued, okay, now I know. I got to survive, so what do you need to survive? You got to have water. You don't survive long without that. And in the desert, you don't survive without shelter. Oh, so I'll take care of those needs. And then guess what? Everything else is about how to attract attention so that I can be rescued. I wonder how many people in our lives are out there, and they're hunkered down just trying to survive. And they've got their mirrors up there, and they're just trying to signal us. I could use you. But we've got the light. The question is, are we willing to follow it into their life? Because if you don't do that, where are you going with this? Are you just coming here on Sunday mornings to sit in these nice comfortable pews in a nice comfortable building and listen to good music and whatever? That's not the point. The point is to follow the light wherever it's going to take.